Wash Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, an extension educator with the University of Nebraska. Today I'm joined by Dr. Matt Spangler, who's an extension beef genetics specialist. Thanks for joining me today, Matt.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Aaron.
So today Matt and I are going to be discussing an article that I wrote for the January issue of the Beef Watch newsletter titled Where's Optimum? And Matt, as we look at what's taken place within the major breeds over the last 15, 20 years, from a genetic breeding value standpoint, what's really occurred there as you look at what's happened from milk production and growth?
Yeah, across the majority of our major beef cattle breeds, and by major, I mean the ones that have the majority of market share, the genetic trends or the changes in breeding values and EPVs for growth traits like weaning weight and yearling weight, and then also milk have steadily increased across the majority of those breeds. And I think that is a success story for what EPDs can do. They can change a trait. But I think the question is, have we changed that trait in a direction that's most profitable for a commercial producer?
Yeah, I think a challenge to me as well. And interesting article that I came across, which was kind of the impetus of what I wrote for the January issue of the Beef Watch newsletter, was some work done that Dr. Lalleman did at Oklahoma State University, where he looked at four different data sets, one out of the Southern Plains, which would be some SPA data, one from Kansas, one from North Dakota State University, which would be the CHAPS data, as well as one from Minnesota. And all of them are longstanding commercial cow-calf data sets that producers work with the university to record their data. What's interesting to me is really over the last 15 years, all four of those data sets showed no change in terms of average weaning weight or pounds weaned per cow exposed. And yet you just said, and I see the data as well, that on average, the major breeds have seen an increase in the breeding values for things like weaning weight, yearling weight, as well as milk production. So that challenges me, and I guess I would ask you, what's your perspective? Why haven't we seen the results of the genetic change from a breed standpoint show up at a commercial cow-calf level?
You know, that's a really good question, Aaron, and certainly there could be a lot of things at play here, but one thing that I begin to question, even though the animals have the genetic potential perhaps to weigh more at weaning, the question is, does the production environment allow them to express that genetic potential? If there aren't improvements in production environment simultaneously with changes in genetics, then it's possible that that environment suppresses really their genetic potential. And so that's a long way of saying perhaps the genetic potential of the animals and the environment aren't in sync.
I think it's also interesting, though, Matt, when we look at what's occurred from a feed yard level and also what's occurred at harvest, average carcass weights have been trending up significantly, really going back 30, 40 years. Are we seeing that potential then being expressed later in life? Or what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I think if we contrast a typical commercial cow-calf production environment to a feed yard environment, it's pretty dramatically different. Most oftentimes, we'd think of commercial cow-calf producers wanting to try to decrease or at least maintain at a steady level their unit cost of production, which means they're not providing a lot of extra harvested forage and feedstuffs. On the other side, a feedlot is trying to get as much feed as they can in them to reduce days on feed, get them to an acceptable market weight as quickly as possible. So you have really a kind of an ad libitum feed scenario in the feedlot, and then something that might be more restricted by the environment, commercial cow-calf sector. So I think you're exactly right. I think once those animals get into an environment where feed is not limited, all of a sudden they can express their genetic potential for growth.
Matt, as you work with commercial cow-calf producers, do you think we've seen mature cow size increase as well over the last 15 to 20 years? Or what, from your perspective, what do you see happening there?
Yeah, I think we have. And I think part of that is due to selection for increased what I'll call immature weight traits, weaning weight, yearling weight. And those are genetically correlated to mature cow weight. So we see this kind of correlated response in mature cow weight. And the reality is commercial producers generally only weigh their cull cows, and how much attention they pay to what those weights are, I'm uncertain about. But there's no doubt, particularly in some regions, those weights have dramatically increased to a point where you begin to wonder if the system is as efficient as it could be.
So So there almost appears to be kind of some antagonisms here. On the one end, from a cattle feeding standpoint, it sure appears, and I think in many cases, you want to get as much weight through the system as you can, because pounds do pay. And we just look at average harvest weight today. I saw a report the other day, I think somewhere around right around 1,400 pounds is kind of average, which that means there's cattle above and as well below that. As people from a cow-calf's perspective think about trying to provide an animal that can go on feed, perform at a high level from a feed yard standpoint, perform very well also on the rail, and yet also have an animal that'll work in their set of resources and environment, what's an approach to try to do that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think there's two general approaches. One is, I think some cow-calf producers mistakenly think that if they're going to produce a large fed animal, maybe an animal that has a live out weight of 1,500 pounds, let's say, that that must mean they need very large cow. And that's simply not true. So it is possible to produce large fed cattle using relatively moderate mature size cows, but then maximizing growth by using a terminal sire. And we've seen that in places like the Goodmanson Sandhills Laboratory, where mature cow weight is around 1,100 pounds, yet they consistently can get yearling cattle to weigh 1,500 pounds at harvest, and even calf feds weigh in low to mid 1,300 pounds. So you don't need large cows to do that. The second thing is using EPDs appropriately. So there are EPDs for mature cow weight. There are EPDs for carcass weight. And so people can begin to select for animals that have increased weight at certain key points, depending on what their breeding objective is. So I think it's using the tools correctly and giving thought to what their economic scenario dictates.
From a commercial cow-calf producer perspective, as we get ready for the bull buying season, as they start to think about which genetic packages are they looking to go out and purchase, are there some tools out there, Matt, that can help them evaluate what level of milk production should be I selecting for? You know, is there some threshold from a mature weight standpoint I need to be paying attention to? Are there some tools out there that can help producers think that through?
There are. So relative to milk, one example that comes to mind is the American Angus Association's Optimal Milk Module. And it's a fairly simple tool to use. It's an online-based tool where producers answer a couple very simple questions about their level of forage availability, the expense of feed, those kinds of things. And it provides a range of milk EPDs for Angus bulls that they should probably be focused on. So I think some simple things like that are helpful. In reality, even if producers aren't buying Angus bulls, they can still use that tool and use that range of values that are on an Angus base and then convert them to whatever breed they wish by using the crossbreed EPD adjustment factors provided by the Meat Animal Research Center. So I think mature cow weight, something that's easy to visualize. Milk is often hidden and people don't understand the impact that can have.
Matt, as we think about a producer who's maybe looking at their cow herd today and saying, you know what, I think I've got too much right now. I think cow size has gotten away from me a little bit. As I look at where I think milk production is, maybe you've got a little more than I would like to have. What's a strategy or approach to try to bring the cow herd back towards maybe what they would identify more as an optimum?
Well, one, I think, is exactly what you said, Aaron, really benchmarking where they are and then truly sitting down and developing what I call a breeding objective. So what are the things that are a source of cost, maybe a very large source of cost, given their benchmarks, and where is the revenue source? And that helps them identify what EPDs are important. And from there, then, I think there's choosing breeds that might best fit their breeding objective. And the second then is the animals within the breed. And that may mean selecting animals that maybe have a milk EPD, for example, or even a growth EPD that's towards the middle of the breed, or even for milk, maybe a little bit below breed average. So more isn't always better. And I think when producers buy bulls, they have to realize that.
Any other thoughts today, Matt, in terms of thinking about developing a system to select cattle that really fit resources?
I think one is identifying a potential problem and then understanding selecting animals that may be at or even below breed average in some cases might be advantageous economically. The other thing I tell people is they're going out and searching for bulls this spring. Purchasing bulls should be in the context of economically, what will that bull return to me? And the majority of beef breeds publish economic selection indices. And so using those indices that fit your breeding objectives, I think, is a way to put some of this in an economic context and also alleviate a lot of the confusion and cumbersome nature of buying bulls.
Anything else today, Matt, as we wrap this up?
No, I don't think so. I would say, though, that I would encourage listeners to take a look at the UNL Beef Production website for additional information on some of these topics, and also encourage them to look at ebeef.org, another website that has educational material about breeding systems and EPDs.
All right. Well, thanks, Matt, for joining us today for the Beef Watch podcast. To find links to today's audio recording, as well as the written version of the Beef Watch newsletter article that's discussed in today's podcast, go to beef.unl.edu.